Welcome to Burning River Radio. And I just want everyone to know right now that I am wearing a purple armband in protest of Justin.
Wow, I didn't protest anything about you. That's kind of rude.
I am Joe Koblitz at Burning River BB on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by a whole lot of Lotta. JL underscore baseball on Twitter because he's JL baseball.
Because I'm boring.
I know he could change it to a whole lot of Lotta, but he still doesn't know who Led Zeppelin is. We haven't gotten that far back yet.
Nope. Still dark on that one.
Eventually, we're going to get to that point in the musical section of the show.
I look forward to it and not understanding your references.
Okay. It is a song. I mean, that's why a whole lot of love.
Oh, yes, I know. I've heard the beat. I know the song.
Okay. Anyway, you wanted to talk about it, and it's a fantastic topic that the umpires, for one day at least, protested Ian Kinsler, who's obviously, like, of all the things going on in the world right now, I have to say the most evil person is obviously Ian Kinsler.
I don't think you could even question it. Yeah.
Like, he broke Carlos Carrasco's hand. I know it was a year ago, but it still hurts.
It's protestable. Yeah, I protest.
I don't know if it hurts him anymore. I'm assuming he's fine. It hurt him at the time. You know what? My greatest thing I love about it is, was it the same guy, Angel Hernandez, who kicked Adrian Beltre out and said he was the biggest
on deck circle? Yeah,
was it the same guy?
Yeah, it was Angel. I'm pretty sure that was Angel Hernandez.
And he called him the biggest crybaby in baseball.
It was either Angel Hernandez or Joe. I think it was Joe West. Regardless, Joe West and Angel Hernandez are two of the worst umpires in baseball.
Joe West is the kind of guy, if you push him over at the top of the hill, he'll just keep going forever.
I mean, there's about two sentences you can say to him, and he'll run you pretty quick. It's pretty embarrassing.
Did you like my Twitter joke today? You probably didn't see it.
I probably didn't.
I said when the players have their big players weekend, they're all allowed to wear jerseys. They have the special jerseys. They got their nicknames on the back. The umpire should all have a shirt that says, "This is actually all about me."
I did see that, actually, and you're 100% right. They should.
Because really, so funny, because it kind of fits with some of the other protest stuff going on, where one side is so extreme that you have to join the other side. You know, just because you it's not because you agree with the other side, it's just because you disagree so much with this side. And the umpires, the altruists in baseball that want to keep it the same as it always has been, are generally against robot umps. But if they're going to keep pulling this type of shit,
yeah,
it's going to change really quickly, because, like, this isn't you literally have umpires, one or multiple umpires, calling out players individually and saying that they don't like them. How can Angel Hernandez call a Tigers game again? Like, that, I don't see how he could possibly fairly call a Tigers game.
I don't agree with it either. I don't know. I mean, and it's not one thing, too, is that I think it was Joe West. It was Joe West who did the interview with about Ian Kinsler in a newspaper. And he's the one who said, he's, you know, about how, you know, he can't, or more verbal attacks. I really don't understand the context. I remember what he said. But Joe West did an interview, I think, with a paper about Ian Kinsler's incident. And he basically said, you know, he just attacked Ian Kinsler for what Ian Kinsler had said about his umpiring skills publicly. Mm. And if everyone's complaining about how Joe West shouldn't have been suspended. But if a player does the same thing, if he complains publicly about a umpire to a newspaper, he's going to get suspended. He's going to get fined.
Yeah, usually. And we see it We see it more in, yeah.
Why would you not suspend the umpire? Because he's, it's not like it's a teacher or a coach or.
Yeah, and I think it's because the umpires are supposed to be robots. They're supposed to be human robots that aren't really part of the game. They are part of the playing field, almost. I mean, if an umpire at second gets hit with the ball's in play. It just keeps going. They're treated literally as part of the playing field.
Right.
So if you had a light, if you had a sensor in the ball, an RFID chip that could tell when it was in some, in a sensor in all the gloves, so the ball knew when it was in a glove, and a weight sensor on first base, so it could tell, you know, how many people were standing on it, where they were standing on it, and a little light that went turned green for safe and red for out. That's what the umpire is supposed to be, right? He's supposed to be this impartial thing that's just there, you know, that's essentially a robot that just says safe, out, foul, fair, and that's all they do.
I mean, if you remember,
so when they, yeah, when they come out with this personality thing, and they, now umpires are talking trash, they're not supposed to talk trash because they're not supposed to be human beings. I mean, that's just part of the job.
And I think everybody points to is you should never, if you remember an who umpired a certain game, like everybody remembers Jim Joyce because of Armando Galarraga's no-hitter mm-hmm. that wasn't a no-hitter. Chances are, if you remember an umpire from a certain game, they probably screwed up.
Yeah, and I'll say I've watched baseball games for years, and I only know the names of about 10 of them. And so I can tell you that those 10 are the bad ones. I know instantly, just because I know their names, that they're bad.
Well, while you're on that, Ryan the Crystal, I saw today on Twitter, put up a umpires with the most bad calls on pitches with more than 10% chance of being called a ball or a strike. And I think this is just this year. Doesn't say. It has to be just this year. But Joe West has 58 bad calls one way or the other. And actually, Mike Winters has 60 bad calls, either bad balls or bad strikes. Angel Hernandez is on that list with 52, and it goes only down to 52. So there's only like 10 of them. But there Joe West, C.B. Buckner, and Angel Hernandez are all on here.
There's at least one website dedicated to that keeps it constantly updated. And I can't say offhand what it was. The last time I accessed it was for an article I wrote for The Comeback. And I haven't written for them in over a year. So it was a while ago. We were discussing something about how terrible strike zones had gotten. And so I cited that as part of the,
plus,
the article. And I think,
I think a HBO lot of actually... Fans. Go ahead.
HBO did a documentary on it as well. I don't think I actually watched that. They just told me about it at the time.
I think a lot of fans, like I know when you go into the ballpark, if you find out that Angel Hernandez or Joe West is, those are the two names that stick out to me the most. If one of them is the home plate umpire, pretty much everyone's like, you know, you can hear collective groan, like everyone knows it's going to be a frustrating night. And I wonder sometimes if that's reputation, like you just hear the name and you're like, oh, great, it's going to be a rough night, you know, strike zone wise. And then you look at the calls, and it's just like, oh, it was a terrible call because you think it's Joe West and C.B. Buckner, and they're terrible. Their reputation's terrible. I don't know if that's necessarily true or not, but the fact that, you know, you can probably make a bunch of fans of either team pretty mad just by knowing the fact those are going to be your home plate umpires for the night mm-hmm. probably says enough about the fact they're not good. And, you know, Angel Hernandez is the guy who's suing Major League Baseball for saying that he never gets to umpire in the postseason, and it's racism. I mean, I think baseball has a racial issue across the board with a lot of things, but I'm sorry, Angel Hernandez, you are a terrible umpire. And, I mean, but his complaint is that Joe West, who is equally as terrible as he is, gets to umpire several playoff games every year while he doesn't. So neither of them should be anywhere near the playoffs, theoretically, but
yeah.
Hernandez is mad that Joe West, who happens to be a white man, gets to use his shitty umpiring in the playoffs and gets paid for it. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what an umpire thinks about working a playoff game, but the fact that they care that much has to be about money, because if it's about more than money, then, you know, then you got a problem, because umpires, like you said, are not part of the game.
Yeah, I'd have to guess that it's mostly money. Although, I mean, there's some accolades. There are a few umpires that are in the Hall of Fame for having extended careers. You know, for some reason or another, they decided to put them in there.
I understand that, I guess, but like overall, umpires are should be pretty anonymous. Like, I don't know, there's got to be what, at least 90 umpires, maybe more, 100.
Yeah, I'm not.
But I mean, you only know, like you said, 10. So
yeah,
the other ones seem to blend in pretty well, and I don't do their job. Like, I'm looking at this list again. I know all these names because they've been around for a while. But, like, even Mike Winters, who's at the top of this list, with 60 bad calls this year. I don't remember the name Mike Winters, so maybe it is a reputation thing. I don't know. But the whole protest thing is ridiculous because I don't understand how they think that umpires should be allowed to speak out against players however they like it. But when you argue with Joe West, he's allowed to kick you out of the game in 2 seconds if he feels like it. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm sorry, it has to go both ways. Like, you can't have a player go to the paper, complain about an umpire, get suspended and fined, and an umpire go to the paper and do the same thing and expect him to not have any reprimand. I think that's stupid.
And in the end, it's a union issue, but it's not like it's not the union's fault. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing as a union, protecting their employees' rights. It's Major League Baseball's fault for allowing the union to have that much power. There are there's full slate of minor league umpires. I mean, there's umpires all over the place that I have to imagine would be at least as good as many of the current major league umpires. You could crush that union pretty quickly if you just guys as scabs started working, which the NFL did for a couple weeks, couple years ago, I'm thinking. And it wasn't that much, there were some bad calls, but it wasn't that much worse than the regular NFL referees. And
I don't know. There was some bad ones.
But they make bad calls all the time.
Yeah.
NFL is harder to call than baseball is. It's much faster. There's so much going on. Because in baseball, you can't have an out in right field when there's a play at third base. Yeah, you're focusing on one thing. Whereas in the NFL, you can have a holding completely away from where the ball is, or roughing the passer, roughing the kicker. You've got to watch everywhere at once, even if the ball isn't there. So it's a lot tougher to, you know, cover the whole playing field. So I get that there should be more mistakes, but in baseball, it's not that hard. And I remember when Questech came in, which must have been late 90s, I'm thinking, maybe early 2000s. And the umpires fought it so hard, they didn't want Questech in at all. It was essentially the old version of pitch effects and things that they have going on now. But it was just two cameras that pointed at home plate and checked to see if a pitch was a ball or strike. And it wasn't great at the time. But it's improved ever since. And now the stuff we have with StatCast, I trust StatCast 100%. And when I'm watching a game and I think an umpire is fucking up royally, I go to StatCast, and StatCast will either confirm or deny what I thought I saw. And a lot of times, like, if a guy's got a pitch with a lot of sink on it and he's throwing it low in the strike zone, it'll cross the plate in the strike zone. The catcher will catch it below the strike zone. And a lot of times umpires will call that a ball, but it's actually a strike. And so if an umpire starts calling that a strike, you're like, I don't know, those are kind of low. So you look it up and you can see, no, those were good calls. But you can also see the bad ones. And the fact that exists, umpires should be paid based on that. The best umpires should get paid the most. The best umpires should get the postseason jobs. And the worst umpires should get fired. They should probably fire 5-10 umpires a year just to keep it moving. Like, think about, what if a player struck out every 3 at-bats and batted 100 and you had to keep him around forever because the players' union said you did? No, that's never going to happen.
That's a good point.
Like, you have to have this constant shuffling of rosters in baseball where you're getting rid – some guys retire, but most guys are cut, released, you know, and just never come back.
Yeah. And there's so many umpires in the minor leagues who have been there for years. It's hard to get in. I mean, it's a hard profession to move up in.
Yeah, that's part of the problem is we know Joe West, so he gets the big games and he gets the All-Star games and whatnot – when he's really the worst person, and somebody who may have a calm demeanor who allows a player to voice his opinion and then go back into the dugout after he strikes out looking or strikes out on a check swing. Just let him go. I never understand the confrontation. You shouldn't be arguing with a robot, and the umpire should be acting like a robot.
Yeah, I agree. It's like, man. I mean, you can't go so far, but I mean.
Well, they're the British guards in the funny hats. Right? You don't know what I'm talking about?
No, I mean.
The British Royal Guards that aren't allowed to move or talk or do anything.
Right. You're supposed to be able to go up there and get right up in their face, and they're not supposed to be able to move.
But if somebody like actually touched them, you'd probably get arrested. Like, so that's where it should be. If you actually, you know, threaten an umpire, really start screaming in their face, yes, you should be ejected. But if you say "fuck you" on the way back to the dugout, all right, let it pass, man. You've heard it a million times. Who cares?
There's got to be a line to draw. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk a minute now on what's going on in the actual games themselves beyond the pieces
agree, though, that the umpires equipment. And their white wristbands are stupid, and Major League Baseball is stupid for.
Yeah, they should have wore rainbow wristbands.
There you go. It would have been more of a.
And everyone would. Then people, they could get some people on their side.
Oh man!
Well, so yeah,
a lot of people freaking out about that too, sadly.
Was somebody wearing a rainbow wristband in a baseball game?
There's teams that are having pride nights, and people are offended that.
Oh, I like that. I almost bought a Giants hat. There's a Giants rainbow hat.
People who are pretty upset about the Mariners. People who have been pretty upset that the Mariners are having women in baseball night, and they had a pride night. And people were pretty upset about that. You know.
Yeah. I will say about the women in baseball night thing, I can understand why you'd be upset with it a little bit. My problem with it is it, just like the Negro Leagues, it should never have had to exist. I think, like, we honor the Negro Leagues, and we remember the guys as much as we can, and I've read a few books on them, and every chance I get, I try to get more information about them. But the underlying idea to me is always that this should never have happened.
True.
It should never have happened. So with something like this, it's awesome that they have women working for the Seattle Mariners, and there should be women working. Like, when you're doing math, like literally, when you're running analysis for a team, who cares what gender you are? It has nothing to do with anything. There's no reason those people couldn't be.
You just want the smartest person for that job, yeah.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything. I get your manager's got to be a man because he's in the locker room with the guy. Like, I get some of the positions are probably going to have to be men until you start having female players. But most of them don't have to, especially like reporting and analysis and all those different up and down the line. Even like a GM, there's no reason that all the men, all GMs have to be men, or all presidents have to be men. It's just, so I feel like it is unnecessary. So I can understand being upset by that a little bit, but it's good that they're doing it.
I agree.
Somebody finally. Okay, so the Indians finally played the Royals. It's been a little bit. And they beat them 15-1 the first two games. And then they lost the third game, but it wasn't too bad of a game. Salazar got hit. As bad as Salazar got hit around early, it wasn't that bad. And so I wrote a piece for tomorrow about how the run differential has essentially remained the same, right? The Indians and Royals run differentials compared to each other. And yet their records have started to change a little bit. they were almost tied at it was July 21st. They were the Royals were a half game back from the Indians, and they had a negative run differential of something massive, 20, 30 runs, something like that. And the Indians were positive by at least that much.
But it doesn't matter. You know, run differential doesn't matter.
Nope. But that's what I'm saying. And they had that conversation on STO where Matt asked Rick, do you care about run differential at all? And he goes, no, it's stupid. I just care about wins. And then Andre goes, yeah, it matters a little bit. When the season's over, when the World Series is over, and you go back through, all that mattered were wins and losses. That's true. But this thing called the Pythagorean run theorem or win expectancy or whatever you want to call it, I don't think it has an official name. And it doesn't even have an official equation. There's a couple different equations people use for it now. But essentially, if you put together runs scored and runs allowed, you can figure out how many teams, how many games a team should have won. And I actually have it. I should, let me see if I can get my page up. But in general, your team will always finish within about 3 wins of what that is. And only in a handful of times ever in baseball history has it been more than, let's say, 5 wins off. Well, so, run differential matters.
Last night with that too.
What was that?
How about the they talk about the Rangers and the,
okay,
the Orioles too, saying they've somehow had a mediocre run differential and still managed to be pretty good. But those guys are the exception, not the rule, especially seeing as how Baltimore has not made it past, I think they made it past the ALDS once in the last couple of years, and you know, Texas got swept up right out of their home ballpark last year. So that's clearly the exception, not the rule.
I keep track of this in my many stats. I keep track of, I have one sheet that's just Indians wins, losses, runs scored, runs allowed, where they finished at the end of the year, all that stuff. The last column I have was just kind of an interest to me, and I wanted to see how lucky or unlucky teams were based on their win percentage compared to their expected win percentage. The biggest difference on here, I'm going to say, okay, the biggest difference since 1986 was in 2013 when they won 56.8% of their games. And Pythagorean win percent said they should have won 55.9. They won 56.8. They should have won 55.9. That's like
the runs allowed and runs scored, right?
Yeah, that's like a couple wins difference. It's really not very much. At least if I could find out.
Last year and see. I'm pretty sure they're Pythagorean.
Yeah, it's literally 2 wins difference. And that's the biggest difference.
Last year Texas won 95 games by runs scored and runs allowed. Texas should have won 82 last year.
And it can happen. There are a few. The Diamondbacks have had a couple. The Orioles have had one. Right. The biggest thing, most of it's luck. When you get down in the short term, most of it's luck. In the long term, it could be a really good bullpen and a really bad starting rotation.
And it's one run games. Texas,
yeah, it's when you're
11.
Yeah, either you win by 1 run or you lose by 10. But you win most of the games by 1 run. But then whenever you lose by 10. That's how you can completely mess the system up. But there are so few teams that do that, that it works almost perfectly. So back when we were doing podcasts a month ago, and I said, I'm not worried one bit about the Royals. That's what I was basing it on, and now we're seeing that. Now they're 6.5 games up.
Yeah. The only thing I was worried about the Royals wasn't the Royals. It was the fact that Miller was out along with some other injuries, and they picked up Jay Bruce, and they just started out slugging teams, which worked out pretty well, plus the rest of the pitching staff stepped up. But, I mean, there was never really any reason to fully be worried because the run differential always kind of winds up coming out in the wash and staying true to what it is, and it has.
And, I mean, the Indians have a great bullpen, so you could actually expect them to outplay their run differential, although they haven't to this point.
Yeah,
that's because they've had a lot of games where they haven't scored, where they've scored like 1 or 2 runs and lost, and then when they win, they usually win a close game. So it's kind of the opposite.
Yeah, so they've had a lot of games that blew teams out, and then they go through stretches where they couldn't score.
Yeah, so I again, not worried at all about it. I think they're still going to handily win the division, and
they should wind up winning by 10.
Yeah, and the Twins made the right move by at least selling off Kinsler, and the Royals made a lot of stupid moves because they might not have been able to bring in a haul for any one of those players. But between Moustakas and Kane and Jason Vargas, like they could have gotten some guys back.
You trade all those guys. You talk about a quick reboot. You know what the White Sox did?
The problem was the White Sox players were under control for more years, and whereas all the Royals guys are out. And I said before the season started that the Royals should have dumped them. If they had dumped them before the season, then they really would have gotten, like for Moustakas, they could have gotten some nice prospects back. And they waited too long, and now they're screwed for a long time because their system sucks, because they traded most of it away to get Cueto and Zobrist and stuff, you know, a couple of years ago to win the World Series.
I mean, they worked out the way they wanted to, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what, I mean, I've always said, not always, but at least recently, if the Indians win a World Series, I don't care if they win again for another, they could lose every single game for 10 years, and that's fine, because I just want the one World Series. Just to make it some validity of me spending this much time focusing on this baseball team for my entire life.
I agree 100%.
I just want that one thing. So I say I don't care, but then we said this about – I heard people saying about the Cavs, and they were pretty mad last year. And they weren't just mad when they lost the finals. They were mad in January when they weren't winning games. So yeah, maybe
not a great time.
So maybe that's not the case, and maybe I will change my mind. And I, like, when I don't want to trade guys like Francisco Mejia, it's mostly because I'm thinking, well, if they don't win the World Series this year, I don't want to ruin the chance of winning it next year. But if they did win the World Series, then I wouldn't be as mad about trading guys like Clint Frazier, let's say, who they did trade to get this current thing that they have going on.
I think if you're trading, like we said, if you're trading prospects like that, it's to get guys who can help you win the World Series this year, but can also help you win the World Series hopefully next year too. Like you said, in case you can't. That's why it always makes sense to trade for guys under contract for another year.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jay Bruce is a rental.
Well, they gave him nothing for him.
Yeah. Which is why I think the Royals waited too long, because I think they would have gotten more than the Mets got for Bruce for Kane. But anybody else, they probably wouldn't have gotten a whole lot for at this point. They just waited too long.
They all did, yeah. I mean, they tried – well, I don't know. If you're not going to trade all those guys, if you're not going to, I guess it makes sense to go all in, but hopefully the fans now see that
– what, going all in is getting Melky Cabrera?
Well, that's as far in as they could get with what they had in their farm system.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, to me, if you did we talk about Shapiro last week?
I don't think so. But also included in that is the fact that, the Royal. It goes back to the offseason. The Royals spent some money stupidly because they had to get a pitcher on free agency to cover the innings that. Mm-hmm. Yordano Ventura could no longer cover, obviously, because of the, dying. And that factors into their contending this year. But, I mean, they also spent it stupidly. You went out and you gave Jason Hamill, who's a pretty – I mean, he keeps beating the Indians this year, but he's a pretty poor pitcher overall. And you went out and gave him a lot of money. I mean, they spent the money, I think, poorly. But they had.
Yeah, they have the most expensive team they've ever had in franchise history right now.
They're going to be lucky to finish at 500.
And next year, if they want to retain these guys, and I know they do because that's how their organization is, they've really got stupid loyalty to guys like Alcides Escobar, who I believe is a free agent at the end of the year as well. But I didn't put them in the list of trading people because nobody wants him. They could probably re-sign him if they want to keep him, and I bet you they do. But to re-sign Moustakas and Vargas and Kane, it's not going to happen. But they'll probably go all in on one of them and just have another stupid deal that makes no sense. What they should do is offer qualifying offers to maybe two of them, maybe like Moustakas and Kane, and let the rest go. Because you don't want them all to accept qualifying offers because they don't plan on contending next year. You just want the qualifying offers of the guys that won't accept them so you can get that draft pick. You know, a first-round draft pick's worth more than Ryder Ryan, at least.
Yeah, I would say so, but you never know. I mean, it's still a draft pick. It's still
Yeah, that's what you do with it. But, I mean, at least you have a chance. I would say a proven prospect right now, if they could have gotten anybody, double A, high A, for any of those guys, is way better than a draft pick because you don't know what's going to fall to you, you know, late in the round. But having not gotten anybody, it's better to have the draft pick than to keep these old guys around forever. But I keep ruining your franchise, Casey. That's awesome. That's good for you. We don't need anyone else competing with the Indians and the White Sox.
I mean, it's not going to be any better next year for us. I mean, the whole division is going to be terrible next year. Minnesota is the only team that's going to be possibly competitive, depending on what they do with they get with pitching in the offseason.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Royals should be the worst team in the division. And then there's Detroit.
Yeah, but they're not getting any better.
Yeah, I mean, it's
that's the problem with these deals. And everyone keeps saying, I mean, like, Kluber signed through age, like, 33 or something like that. It's fairly late into his career. He's already 30. So he signed through 2020. So you can do the math. I'm like, 33 right. or 34. Something like that. So you could say, like, and I would love them to sign Kluber forever. I would love him to be this generation's Bob Feller, a guy who stays around for 15 years and only pitches for the Indians. I've been waiting my whole life to see a player only play for the Indians. The best one we have so far is Rafael Perez. Literally, that's the longest tenured Indian in my life who's only played for the Indians.
That's weird.
I researched it a while back. But and that's because he wasn't good enough. Like, he did sign on with the Mariners, but he never played in the majors for them. So I would love to see Kluber be that guy. But if you do that, then you're going to risk looking like the Tigers. Because if Verlander is still a decent pitcher, and Kluber probably will still be a decent pitcher into his late 30s, but he's not going to be what he is now, and if you pay him $35 million a year or whatever the going rate's going to be at the time, then you're not going to be able to afford anybody else, and you know, you could really mess up the franchise, which is what they were worried about doing with Tomy back in 2002.
And it would have worked out okay for what it's worth, but you didn't know that at the time. You had no way of knowing.
Well, if they had signed Tomy, we've had these discussions before on other shows, but if they had signed Tomy at the time, then you don't have extensions to Hafner and Sizemore and those guys because they don't have the money to do that. So I think they would have – they wouldn't possibly have not even been competitive in 2007. Like, it may have ruined that whole run from 2005 on where they actually were slightly competitive just because they signed this big guy who was injured all the time.
Well, I mean, the issue with that was, anyway, the farm system was still crap.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it. I do want to go into that now, the farm system. We just did our top 10 minor league lefties starting pitchers. And starting pitchers kind of a, I don't know, it's not necessarily a real thing, especially the lower levels. A lot of the guys they have going in the AZL right now will come in relief and pitch 5 innings. To me, that's a starter. That's somebody that they're working on to be a starter in the future, and they just don't have the physical starts to give everybody they want to be a starter in there. So I would include guys like that. So we made our list up, and you didn't like our list. You didn't like the options.
Well, I mean, a year ago, the options were – I mean, if we did this conversation prior to last July
– And we did.
It would have been much – well, I know we did, but we would – it would have been a much better state in the system. There would have been a much better.
Yeah, there have been the rank. There have been guys that a couple guys got promoted. Ryan Merritt, I believe, was on the list last year, and he's up. Who else was there?
Morimondo.
Sean Morimondo and Adam Plutko.
Oh, because we didn't do just left and right last year. We didn't do just left. We did left and right last year.
Yeah, it was everybody. So there were a lot of guys towards the top that got promoted, and I think they were towards the top just because they were in AAA necessarily. Well, right now there are no left-handed starters in AAA who have not been to the majors. There's a few in Akron. There's one in Akron. There are.
Are you sure about that?
Lugo.
Oh, yes, Lugo. Okay.
Yeah, so there's one in Akron. Because I said two because Comiskey's on the roster, but he's on the DL still.
Right, okay.
There's one in Lynchburg, and he started the season in Lake County. And then there's like five in Lake County. So the entire Lake County rotation is lefty, except for Micah Minyard.
Pretty bad. Well, so Sean Brady too.
Sean Brady. Yeah, he's a lefty.
Yeah, well, and there's also Tanner Tully.
Yeah, Tanner Tully is the guy in Lynchburg who used to be in Lake County. And Lake County has Brady Aiken, Sean Brady, Sam Hentges, and Juan Hillman.
No, Sean Brady's in Lynchburg now.
Oh, is he? I missed a promotion. Okay.
Yeah.
Well. Okay, yeah, so
Anderson Polanco's now back in Arizona, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that.
Okay.
I see nothing.
Okay.
Anyway, so our final list is fairly, I'd say fairly weak after three. We've got Juan Hillman first, and he was in the same draft as Tristan McKenzie, and I think they're fairly good friends at this point. They played their first year in AZL.
And then Mahoney Valley.
And they're both doing fairly well right now, although Tristan has obviously surpassed him in level. Sam Hentges was number two. Francisco Perez was number three. And my guess is most people have no clue who that is.
Probably not. Very few.
I love Francisco Perez because when I watched him in extended spring this year, as I was watching him, my thought was, this is who Brady Aiken was supposed to be. He's a lefty who throws mid-90s and has a killer curveball. Like, as I was watching him, at every start, and I saw him pitch quite a few times between this and last year. He actually won the Pitcher of the Year last year in the AZL, but he didn't really – I didn't see him pitch too many times in the AZL last year for some reason. I think he pitched on the road a lot. But I saw him in extended spring in Instructs last year. And, man, he's really got that killer curveball, and I think he's a major leaguer. Like, I wouldn't say Sam Hentges is necessarily a major leaguer, but I think Francisco Perez has, because of that breaking pitch, a really good chance.
Well, Brady Aiken still has a good curveball. It's just
there's no strikes, and there's no velocity on the fastball to go with it, and he can't throw that for strikes either.
Yeah. Yeah, but so then the rest of the list was Rob Comiskey, who I did not vote that high because I got no clue where the guy is. People have asked me, where's Rob Comiskey? I don't know. Go find him on Twitter or something and ask him in person because I have no clue. I haven't seen him in Arizona. I think he's in Arizona, but I haven't seen him physically. He's injured.
And not throwing the baseball. Yeah.
But that's all we can say. Like, I don't – like, so – maybe never on Rob Kaminsky. Then we got Tanner Tully, who is another young guy who I kind of like. Luis Lugo, who, either way. And then Brady Aiken really fell off our list this year after being, I think, number two last year in the entire – of all pitchers.
Well, like I said, when you lead the league in – walks, or you set a franchise record in walks, that's usually going to get you down.
Yeah, with the captains. Well, and I'll say, I think when we did our first, the first time we did huge staff-wide rankings was in 2015, I believe. And I think that was the year he was drafted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to include him in our draft rankings. I said he hasn't thrown a pitch yet. I don't believe we should rank him because I don't know what he's going to do, and I got outvoted. Everyone else, I mean, I could have dictated it and said he's not on the list, but everybody else said, leave him on there. I said, fine, we'll leave him on there, and he was ranked fairly high, which in MLB had him high, and everyone else did. You know, all the other publications had him high as either the Indians' number one or number two pitcher, and I wouldn't allow that. We had McKenzie higher than him because I saw McKenzie, you know, for 3-4 months.
Right,
so before the rankings came out. So I was able to actually judge on what he was physically capable of doing, and he's the best pitcher I've ever seen in Arizona.
Right, you know, so thing last year, everyone was just going off of whatever publication wrote a scouting report on him of, which is stupid.
Yeah, and I don't like to do that in general. I prefer writing about guys I've actually seen, you know, pitch live. Play live. So I didn't like ranking Aiken at all then, and then last year we still ranked him fairly high because of potential. It was, we don't know. He's supposed to be good. Let's just put him towards the top. And now that we're seeing what he has, it's a real, real disappointment.
I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody knows if the velocity is coming back at this point. I don't know if anybody, maybe the command can come back, but, you know, nobody knows for sure because Tommy John is not a 100% cure. I mean, I think what's the rate, 85% or 80%? I forget what the rate is of successful comebacks, but the Astros scouting report, the medicals, when the Astros, you know, drafted him and turned him down or tried to give him a lesser bonus because they weren't convinced, they saw some medicals, said that he had a small UCL tendon, which is Tommy John. That's the ulnar collateral ligament in the elbow that keeps, you know, connects the elbow. And they claimed the MRI showed that he had a small ligament, which I guess isn't good, and it snapped, you know, like they said it was going. They thought it was going to snap. They thought it was only a matter of time, and it was. But the success in Tommy John is not 100%.
I mean, he was they're drafted after the season is over, so I don't even know that he was pitching when it happened. I think it may have happened before. Like, he may have known he needed surgery before the draft even happened.
Well, he ultimately tore the UCL when he turned down the Astros' lower offer, and he went to IMG Academy, and I think it was like 10 or 15 pitches into his
first start. Okay.
It was his first start after he went to the prep school and tore it. He was done.
Mm-hmm.
But their medicals team said that it was a small tendon, and it was going to give way. It was going to be an issue. They didn't like something they saw, and they ended up being – maybe they were right. I don't know.
Yeah, and I still don't feel like it was a wasted pick by the Indians. I think if he was good enough to be picked first overall, you know, at some point, that you still want. And they've had much success with a lot of Tommy John guys coming back. Not everybody, obviously, but with Danny Salazar and Zach McAllister, those guys all came back and had great success. And then even Tomlin, I don't think ever had Tommy John, but
yes, he had.
Oh, he did? The most recent one was the shoulder surgery, though, and he came back better than ever after that. So they have had a great success rate in rehabbing these guys. So I think it was a good pick, and they still got Tristan McKenzie and Juan Hillman after him in that same draft. So it was a really solid draft. I think that might have been the Tyler Krieger draft too. So like they got a lot of good guys in that 2015 draft. So I don't feel like the pick was wasted.
No,
but I also don't think like we should ever, like, at this point, and I'm not going to throw him away either when he's in single A, no matter how many guys he's walking.
He's only 20.
Yeah, I would give him 3 more years at least before I would worry about throwing him away. I'm just saying, when you're ranking guys, he now is towards the bottom instead of towards the top.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very, very good chance he's going to repeat Lake County next year, and I guess it was a worthwhile risk or gamble. I mean, you don't know for sure, but anything can happen. But, I mean, like you said, the rest of the draft, it looks like it's going to be a little better. You just don't know. I mean, they were – what, they sandwiched that pick with Zimmer was picked in 2014, I believe, and then last year was Will Benson. So hopefully Will Benson works out. I mean, Nolan Jones looks like it's going to work out. You don't know for sure, but he's doing exactly what everyone thought he was going to do. It's at Mahoning Valley right now, but they're doing what he's doing, what everybody thought he could do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. Okay, so the 2015 was Aiken, McKenzie, Hillman, Mathias, Krieger, Tom, and then it gets a little weaker after that. But those first six guys still have major league potential. Some of them have all-star potential, particularly the two pitchers and the two second basemen have a ton of potential, and they're all in the upper minors for the most part, except Hillman and Aiken are in A, but the rest of them are all up in the upper minors already. So I mean, that was great, and they got Luke Wakamatsu late in the draft, and they got Todd Isaacs late in the draft. So there are still plenty of good players, you know, that could come out of that draft. And I just think it was a solid class all around for him.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I mean, so far it looks like So I think Wakamatsu is going to be a good pick somewhere down the road. I don't know. It's just about the risk. I mean, the first round pick is you have. It's so.
When you're you don't have to hit. They didn't hit on it for 20 years.
Okay, they did, but you have to rely on the successes of lower draft picks. Like, you know, Jason Kipnis worked out well as a second round pick. Who else on the team was a higher pick? I mean,
well, that's on right now. Chisenhall and Bauer were first rounders.
Right. I mean, but in general, you need your first round picks to mostly. I mean, the reason Indians had that window from about 05 to 08 was because they drafted Sabathia, and that worked out. He was a first rounder. And then the rest were trades. I mean, Grady Sizemore was a trade. Cliff Lee was a trade. Esdrubal Cabrera was a trade.
But they're still running off that. Kluber came on a trade. McAllister came on a trade. Salazar was an international signing.
Well, yeah, an international.
You know, so they're still.
But I mean, their drafting for a couple period of years was really good. Lindor was a slam dunk.
Yeah, Santana was a trade. A lot of these guys came in trade. They have more free agents now than they've ever had before.
Well, this is why I laugh when people say, you know, well, this they did this in the 90s. They did this in the 90s. The Indians of the 90s have not done anything different. The Indians today have not done anything different than they did in the 90s. They built on draft picks and trades. Like, I mean, you look at the 90s, Sandy Alomar, Carlos Baerga were trades.
Yeah, Lofton, Omar.
Lofton was a trade, and then Omar was a trade. Tomy was a late-round pick that worked out. Manny was a high pick. Bell was a high pick.
Nagy was up there.
Was a high pick. Nagy was a high pick. And then they got veteran free starting pitchers, and they got Eddie Murray. Like, and those guys were not in their primes. Dennis Martinez wasn't his prime.
No, Hershiser was way out of it, yeah.
None of them were in their primes. So that's why I laugh. People say, well, they did this in the 90s. No. They're same exact way they did in 1994, where they're trading for other teams' prospects and helping them develop, and yeah, they're drafting well, and they're adding veteran free agents at the end.
In 1998, they said, let's go get a Hall of Famer. And they signed Robbie Alomar, who was the biggest free agent acquisition in team history and pretty much was the biggest acquisition until Encarnacion.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe not in total, too.
Not necessarily in total dollars, but in what he was to the game at the moment they signed him, those two are the biggest.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say anybody else who's been bigger than those two, unless you want to. I don't know. Or Hershiser was pretty good, but
he was at the twilight of his career, not on a multi-year deal for mega millions. You know, where they're really giving an outside guy that much money. They just don't generally run that way, but they have this year. Even trading for Bruce is something that they never would have done ever in the history of the franchise before this year.
That really is. I think Jay Bruce is the boldest move they've ever made for the fact, like you said, he's a rental. And
the funny thing is he cost almost nothing. I'm telling you, right, Ryan, we'll pour another one out for him, I guess.
I mean, I still like the guy. I think he's got a shot. But, I mean, I agree with you in general. He's not – for what you're giving up, you're getting a ton back. And
I mean, he's not as good as Ben Heller. And Ben Heller was one tiny itty-bitty bit of what got Andrew Miller.
Yeah. But I mean, and you also remember the Indians were willing to pick up the salary, which is the biggest thing, and that's why I think it's the boldest move, because the Indians are picking up $3 million. Was it $3.7 million? I think is what he's owed the rest of the year. To add a hitter for 3 months and hopefully the postseason. You know, that's a pretty bold move. That's like you said. That's something the Indians don't do. Is they would not hand out $3.7 million. And a prospect, it was not really a prospect, I guess, but for a guy who's only going to be here for a few months, like that's the boldest move. And because they already have Boone Logan's contract on the books, which was kind of like, I don't know, fun money.
Well, he has an option for next year, so he's not really going to cost him a ton at this point.
No, but I mean, but after they signed Encarnacion, they went out and gave. Yeah, I think it's going to wind up costing them $10 million if they pick up his option for next year. You know, that was essentially fun money. After they signed Encarnacion, they said, "Well, we don't have the money for Davis. We don't have the money for this. We're pretty much tapped out." And then Boo Logan sat on the free agent market, and they got him. And obviously, he got hurt, but he was pitching pretty solidly until he got hurt. And then the Jay Bruce thing is just—I mean, they had to do it because of the injuries. But I would say if you go back to the Mark Shapiro era, because you were going to bring out Mark Shapiro before we went down this path.
No, this is actually exactly what I was talking about with Mark Shapiro. Was that right, he never did this? Never happened with him. I'd say Jay Bruce right now is the hottest Indians hitter I've seen in the second half since Kareem Garcia.
Oh, in 2002, wow.
I don't remember what year it was, but there was a year he had like 80 RBI in half a season.
He had like, I want to say 15 home runs from the month of August to the end of the season or something.
Yeah, it came up recently when I was looking at like the best first half of anyone ever on the Indians. I couldn't find exactly what I was looking for, so I never used it for anything, but his name popped up there. You know, it's the best first season with the Indians. He was.
Yeah, and then what did they do to Garcia after? I don't remember. I think
they traded him to the Mets.
So they get him back. Was he part? No, he wasn't part of the. Are you sure it wasn't the Yankees?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure about anything. I could look things up, or I could just make up bullshit, which is more entertaining.
I thought it was the Yankees.
He did play for the Yankees. Let's see. The year we are talking about.
2003, he got traded, I think.
Yeah, we're talking about the end of 2002. In 2002, he played for the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, in 2003.
I think he came from the Yankees.
Yeah.
Yes, he was released in 2002 and then signed by the Indians, and then he was sold to the Yankees. So the Yankees dumped him. The Indians signed him as a free agent, and then they sold him back to the Yankees the next year.
And do you know why they got rid of Kareem Garcia?
No,
This will tie right in with one-year wonders, because Jody Garrett was outplaying him in 2002 or 2003.
Yeah, Jody Garrett was one of my favorites ever. He should have won Rookie of the Year that year.
Oh, was that the year that Ichiro won it? No, it was.
No, that was 2001 over Sabathia.
Oh, it was Angel Barroa, who was a one-year wonder as well.
Yeah, none of them were any good.
Yeah, well. Well, hopefully, I mean, well, if Jay Bruce sucks next year, he probably won't be an Indian, so who cares?
You know, it's funny because I see people already talking about, let's sign Jay Bruce next year, let's sign Carlos Santana, bring him back. And I'm thinking, like, let him go.
31, man. Never know.
Just let him go. You know what? The biggest market inefficiency right now is keeping your own young guys on the team and letting your old guys go.
Mm-hmm.
Let some other team pay stupid money for them. It's really not worth it. If you can sign Cody Allen or Andrew Miller, like work that out next year, that's great. But
good luck.
When you a hard-hitting first baseman or corner outfielder, they're really not that hard to find.
Bobby Miley.
Yeah, you'll figure something out.
Oh, wait. Oh, my bad.
No, we can't talk about Jesus on the show.
Jesus, I think he had a game-winning homer last night, and he had a home run today.
I think I copywrote that on the Tribe Time Now. All Jesus Aguilar talk.
Somebody asked that today. Why didn't they ever give him a shot? We were talking about it, and I forget what year it was. I think it was 2015 they had a chance to give him a shot, and they didn't really let him play because that's the year they got Chris Johnson from the Braves to get rid of Swisher. And then last year, for some reason.
2014, they gave him about 20 games. And then 2015, they gave him a week. And then 2016, they brought him up every time they played the White Sox because they had two lefties in the rotation. So he played 9 games and only got 6 at-bats and didn't have a hit. But to me, like, that was such a rough way to treat a guy. Like, oh, we'll bring you up when we play the White Sox and you'll pinch hit once. It's just
Well, didn't, if I recall correctly, maybe I'm wrong. Didn't Chris Gimenez start at first base a little bit last year for some reason?
Was that last year or the year before?
Well, they didn't have Chris Gimenez in 2015, so
that was 2016. Yeah, okay. They all run together. But there were definitely games where he started there over Aguilar. Obviously, they never liked him, and obviously, he was never going to stick around.
But the fact is, he could have at least filled in better than Chris Gimenez at first base last year, and they decided not to. So that just tells you that, I mean, look how good he's doing this year in Milwaukee. So that just tells you that like you said, I mean, hard-hitting first basemen aren't a dime a dozen, but, I mean, they're easier to find than an all-star center fielder because those guys never go on the free agent market. There's a reason why Encarnacion and Chris Carter and Matt Holliday and all those other guys were free agents. I mean, Yonder Alonso is going to be a free agent next year. There's a reason those guys are free agents.
Yeah.
You don't see Mookie Betts is or
except for Lorenzo Cain's going to be a free agent.
Well, yeah, I don't really consider him a big time player, but I mean those guys.
He's an MVP candidate. He's pretty fantastic. But yeah, in general, you try to keep those guys around forever. All right, I think that's going to be enough for this one. We will catch you back next Sunday. More fun in the sun. Hot times in the city. Indians are going home.
About time.
Or as they say, we are going home!
I don't remember what Progressive Field looks like.
I think that's a lie.
What?
I think that's a lie.
I don't remember what it looks like. It's been so long.
Okay. Well, we will catch you again next time. Make sure to check out burningriverbaseball.com. You can read that piece about run differential, and there's another one about the top 10 lefties in the Indians farm system. So right now, that was our last one of the year. There are now rankings for every single position, kind of. We did a combined one for corner outfielders and a combined one for relievers. So those are top 15s, I believe. But then there's rest, first base, second base, all around the diamond, top 10 list for everything. So if you search for them, and we will compile those eventually into one massive super list.
Eventually we'll have the entire minor league recap at some point.
Well, I mean, as it comes, as each league ends and the DSL is the first one to end, it'll be over in about a week, which they have to be extremely happy about after their season. And then the AZL will end at the same time everyone else ends, which is the end of the first week in September.
Oh, not soon enough.
Holy shit. They've lost 12 out of 13.
Oh.
Bad. They've lost
like 20. They're going to have a lot of good prospects, right? Because winning in the minor leagues means absolutely jack shit about future of a prospect. So.
They've lost like 22 of 25.
So they're going to have a lot of good prospects out of that group, huh?
Okay. I wrote about Oviedo. How do you say his name?
Oviedo.
Oviedo?
Luis Oviedo.
Luis Oviedo. I wrote about him because I saw him pitch, and I feel like he got a rough shake of it. So that's in the minor league recap from this week, from Sunday, if you want to read about Oviedo and why his ERA probably shouldn't be 8, even though it is.
Well, that's good to hear.
All right. That's way too much. we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.